I think he's a man of his word, so we're going to find out. But I think he's a man of his word.
That trust of Kim Jong-un uttered by the U.S. president lies in the balance. This is Friday, January 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Also coming your way, it has not been a joyous holiday season for millions of people in Australia. Investigators worldwide are looking into how a powerful automaker escaped Japan. It's all coming your way on today's VOA Asia. In the wake of Kim Jong-un's announcement of an upcoming new strategic weapon, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo expressed hope that said the North Korean leader will take a different course. Echoing President Donald Trump, Pompeo said talks with North Korea have eased long-distance tensions between the two countries. But as VOA's Lada Sahok reports, Kim is signaling that he is not happy with the status quo.
Talking to Communist Party officials at the close of the year, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un announced that Pyongyang will soon reveal a new strategic weapon and could end a two-year moratorium on nuclear testing. Pompeo responded in an interview to the Fox News channel that he hoped Kim would make the right choice.
We hope that Chairman Kim will take a different course. President Trump came into office with the threat of war with North Korea real and a true concern for the American people. He took a tact which said we can deliver a better outcome for the people of North Korea. We're hopeful that Chairman Kim will make the right decision. He'll choose peace and prosperity over conflict and war. I saw that reporting. I hope he doesn't go in that direction.
Earlier, President Trump had a similar response.
He did sign a contract. He did sign an agreement talking about denuclearization, and that was signed. Number one sentence, denuclearization. That was done in Singapore. And I think he's a man of his word, so we're going to find out. But I think he's a man of his word.
Instead of a traditional New Year's speech, Kim delivered an extensive report to the party plenum in which he said there was no sense in continuing to adhere to the moratorium on nuclear and long-range missile testing because the United States has refused to ease economic sanctions. People in neighboring South Korea are frustrated with the lack of progress toward permanent peace.
I don't think there will be a solution because both the U.S. and North Korea are being stubborn in their own ways.
And they say both sides should make concessions.
Nuclear weapons are North Korea's last resort. If they didn't possess them, the U.S. would let them be. So that's why they are trying to secure nuclear weapons and why the U.S. is pressuring the North with economic sanctions. They should de-escalate step by step. The North should give up their nuclear weapons and the U.S. should lift the sanctions. I think we need to find peace this way.
Trump counts easing tensions with North Korea as one of the key achievements in his foreign policy. But negotiations with Pyongyang have been largely deadlocked since Trump and Kim's summit in Hanoi last February, and Kim gave Washington until the end of last year to ease the sanctions. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Joining us now on VOA Asia is Joe Sorrencione, the president of the Plowshares Fund. That's a public grant-making foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. Joe, what's the cause of the apparent delay in showing whatever this Christmas or holiday surprise is or was from Kim?
Well, it's possible they ran into some technical problems, but more likely Kim Jong-un is leaving the door open to talks with the United States. He threatened a Christmas present. He didn't deliver it. He's now threatening a test of a new strategic weapon in, quote, the near future. But that's not now. It appears that what Kim is trying to do is get what he really needs, some sanctions relief, some security guarantees from Donald Trump and giving him one more chance to do so. We don't know how long that door may be open. Maybe it's a week, maybe it's the rest of the month, but he does appear to be determined to launch or test a new weapon should the administration fail to respond.
Now, as far as what they might be developing, what do you think it is? They've tested some longer range intercontinental ballistic missile devices in the past. Is that where they're going? Are they going back toward nuclear or what?
It's probably a missile test. I mean, any normal missile program would require many more tests than what they've had so far. They've had three tests of two different kinds of long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles. They could use another one. They've shown that they can get them up in the air, but they really haven't demonstrated they can get them back down. That they have a workable reentry vehicle that can deliver the weapon with accuracy on a target, so you could just do that. There's some speculation that they have a solid fuel missile ready to test. The previous ones have been liquid fueled. These take longer to put on a launch pad and fuel, making them more vulnerable. A solid fuel ICBM would be a mobile capability that would be more threatening to the United States. And there's also some thought that it could be a submarine launched ballistic missile. The ones they've tested so far have been from underwater test barges, but they have a very large submarine under construction. A test from that would be a dramatic advance in North Korea's capability.
Where do you think the U.S. goes here? The U.S. seems to have tried everything, ranging from belligerence at some point and bad relationships between the U.S. and North Korea to so far what the Trump administration has done by, you know, reaching out a hand of so-called friendship.
Well, they've done everything except offer them a reasonable compromise deal. Donald Trump appears to have great confidence in his own ability to get a deal sort of on the fly, one-on-one, in just a meeting with Kim. This clearly hasn't worked, and for good reason. That's not the way you negotiate complex agreements like this. And it's also been hampered by infighting. You've had some reasonable people like the current deputy Secretary of State, Steve Biegun, who has wanted to have a step-by-step approach that North Korea give up a significant amount of its capability in exchange for a significant sanctions relief, and then we build on that. But he's been undermined by John Bolton, now departed, who wanted a Libya-style deal, which is what they presented at the Hanoi summit, that is, North Korea do everything to disarm before we do anything in terms of sanctions relief or security guarantees. The administration appears either unwilling or unable to put forward a reasonable compromise plan. They may be able to mount such an effort in the next couple of weeks, but I wouldn't be optimistic.
Do you think politics enters into either side what they're doing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Kim Jong-un has his own internal politics. He's getting pressure from his military, from some of the people involved in the programs for further tests. I mean, they want to see if these weapons work or not. And on the Trump side, he does not want to go to war. So he's looking for steps that can sort of minimize the North Korea threat and therefore minimize any actions he might take in the wake of a test. He's looking at the 2020 election. That's what he cares about more than anything else. So if, and I would say when, Kim does test this weapon, I would expect some rhetoric from Trump, some actions at the lower end of the escalatory ladder, like some new exercises or moving some ships into the area. But I don't think Trump's going to do anything that will provoke a crisis. In situations like this, like the situation with Iran right now, what you're worried about is an unintended consequence. One side thinks they're taking a reasonable step that appears to the other to be highly provocative, and they respond in an unexpected way, and the thing spirals out of control. That's why it'd be so urgent to get talks going again between the U.S. and North Korea.
You seem to shy away when I ask you about testing or any development as far as the nuclear area is concerned. What's happening there? Is that just they're not going to develop it, or are they doing it in secret, or what? What do you think?
Well, it's possible you could get a new nuclear weapons test, but their last one was pretty successful. They seem to have demonstrated a hydrogen bomb, a thermonuclear device. They could do another one of those, but in some ways that's more provocative to Russia and to China. And so I think Kim might try to thread the needle here, do a missile test that is primarily a threat to the United States, Japan also, and less provocative for China and Russia. They want to wean China and Russia away from the global sanctions that were imposed at the United Nations. They're trying to get some sanctions relief, if not from the United States, then from China. So they're eyeing the least provocative action towards China.
Joe Cerencioni is the president of the Plowshares Fund. Joe, Happy New Year, and thanks for being with us.
We're off to a rocky start, but thank you, Ira.
We continue now on VOA Asia. Thousands of holidaymakers have been warned it is not safe for them to stay in bushfire-ravaged parts of eastern Australia ahead of more dangerous conditions at the weekend. A tourist leave zone has been declared for a large stretch of the New South Wales coast. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
The mass exodus from southern New South Wales is underway. The authorities are urging tourists and residents to leave while they can. More dangerous bushfire conditions are forecast for southeastern Australia in the days ahead. Authorities are extending the evacuation zone in New South Wales, the nation's most populous state, to include more areas of bushland and national park. A week-long state of emergency will be imposed, which gives fire officials greater powers. As dozens of blazes continue to burn across several states, the Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison, who's a strong supporter of the nation's large coal industry, is defending his handling of the emergency. He acknowledges that climate change is one of many factors fueling the blazes, but he insists his climate change policies are adequate and responsible.
Our emissions reductions policies will both protect our environment and seek to reduce the risks and hazards that we're seeing today, and at the same time, it will seek to ensure the viability of people's jobs and their livelihoods all around the country.
The crisis has been devastating and deadly. Today, the funeral has been held for Geoffrey Keaton. He was one of two volunteer firefighters killed when a tree hit their fire engine last month near Sydney. He was posthumously awarded a bravery commendation. Almost 1,300 homes have been destroyed in the state of New South Wales since the fire crisis began in September. At least 18 people have been killed. These are extraordinary times in Australia. The bushfires have brought terror into the lives of ordinary people. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Lebanon received an Interpol arrest warrant Thursday for former Nissan boss Carlos Ghosn as Turkey launched an investigation into his daring escape from Japan via Istanbul. Reuters correspondent Joe Davies has more.
There was a media frenzy on Thursday outside a Beirut house, believed to be the home of ousted Nissan boss Carlos Ghosn, now the subject of an Interpol arrest warrant. It's thought a car seen leaving and then returning to the property was carrying his wife. A man also entered, telling reporters he was a doctor and there for Ghosn's wife. There was no sign, though, of the man the media were hoping to catch a glimpse of. Former auto executive Carlos Ghosn has become an international fugitive after he revealed on Tuesday that he'd fled to Lebanon. The 65-year-old was escaping Japan's justice system, which he described as rigged. Ghosn was first arrested in Tokyo in November 2018. He faces four charges for alleged financial crimes, including hiding income and enriching himself through payments to car dealerships in the Middle East, charges which he denies. Sources close to him say a delay to a trial until April next year and a strict ban on communicating with his wife were behind his decision to flee. It's understood he used a private security company to help him escape Japan on a private jet. Flight tracking data suggests Ghosn used two different planes, flying to Lebanon via Istanbul. On Thursday, Turkish police detained seven people, including four pilots, as part of an investigation into Ghosn's passage through the country. Japanese public broadcaster NHK said authorities there had allowed Ghosn to carry a spare French passport in a locked case while out on bail. It potentially shed some light on how he managed to escape, with other passports believed to be in possession of Japanese lawyers. Ghosn, who holds French, Lebanese and Brazilian citizenship, has deep ties to Lebanon, the country of his childhood. A senior Lebanese security official said it wasn't clear if Ghosn would be summoned for questioning over the Interpol arrest warrant, but said Lebanon doesn't extradite its citizens to foreign states.
That's Reuters correspondent Joe Davies. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Visit our voanews.com program page. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gal, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Steve Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.